Hey, welcome to Woman Birders Happy Hour. I'm your host and mixologist, Hannah Bushert. I'm a birder, a woman, and someone who enjoys a good drink. Join me as I talk to women from around the world, from all walks of life, that enjoy birds too, about their experiences, what it's like to be a woman birder, and advice they have for others. I'll also have a different cocktail to share with you that pairs nicely with this chat. Bridget Butler, who goes by the Bird Diva, has been a naturalist and passionate advocate for wildlife and nature study. She seeks to tap into a person's passion for nature through exploration and deep listening and strives to turn that passion into action to protect our special places. She's extremely active in the Vermont birding scene, and you might have seen Bridget on some local news channels, at festivals, and online through her awesome content on her website and social media channels. Bridget offers a variety of bird walks and talks, classes, guiding, and even habitat management services. I thought Bridget was just a really insightful person to talk to. She works really hard to get people excited about nature and birds, and also is a great advocate to get women excited about birding and looking back towards historical women that don't always get the recognition they deserve. And one of the positives, not that there's many, that have come from COVID is that we're forced to explore new technology, and many of us have become experts at Zoom and all this other conference, and that's given us the opportunity to engage with others from outside our area more often, which Bridget has definitely done and is spreading her message and her incredible passion for all of this further. So Bridget mentions that her spark or wow bird is an indigo bunting that she saw one morning very early as it sang from the top of a tree shouting, "Fire, fire, where, here, here." And if you've ever seen an indigo bunting, you'll know that they're just a striking, beautiful blue bird that are found throughout the Midwest to the East Coast and south through the Caribbean and Central America. They are sometimes called blue canaries as they are brilliantly colored, yet very common birds in their area that whistle their song throughout the eastern North America. These gorgeous birds can be found in fields and shrubs near trees. They sing from the tallest perch throughout the day and feed on insects and seeds in low vegetation. And while researching indigo buntings, sure, they're beautiful and, you know, just a fun bird to watch. But I was trying to figure out, like, what's special about them to help to incorporate into this cocktail. And honestly, I was having a little trouble. Like, I know their brilliant blue color is definitely something, but I wanted it to be a little bit more than just that. Because they're a great bird to watch, but you know, there's something interesting about every single species. And this is what I found out about them. And I'm going to include some more information in the show notes if you're interested in learning more. But in the late 1960s, researchers demonstrated how birds migrate using the stars for guidance by studying indigo buntings in a planetarium under a natural night sky. And these incredible little birds are actually able to adjust the angle of orientation to a star, even as it moves throughout the night. So we really learned a lot about how birds migrate because of indigo buntings, which is part of the reason for this cocktail, which is based on a drink called a Starry Night, which doing the research. So, you know, birds are great because we all have kind of the same names for these things, but cocktails are not necessarily the case. I feel like most of us know what a Cosmo is, and most of us, you know, can make certain things. Greyhounds are pretty standard, but Starry Night is a drink that does not have a single recipe, as I have found, but just many, many different ones people have created and no two are alike. It does seem the majority of them have champagne, so here we go for your indigo bunting cocktail. It is composed of one shot cranberry juice cocktail, one shot blue curacao, and then you fill the rest with champagne and sparkling wine. And unfortunately, this is a pretty liquor-heavy cocktail, so I'm not sure there's an adequate mocktail version. Sorry about that. So your directions, pretty simple. Mix together the cranberry juice and blue curacao into a cocktail shaker with ice. Mix it up a little bit so it cools it all off, and then strain it into a champagne flute. And then top it off with champagne or that sparkling wine. The combination of cranberry and blue curacao turns the drink a beautiful indigo blue color, and the sparkling of the champagne is reminiscent of stars in the night sky. It's fruity, bubbly, and just a gorgeous color. So grab whatever you've got to drink, whether it's this cocktail that we've made for this episode, coffee, wine, water, or something else, for another interview with an amazing woman birder. I hope it inspires you. I hope it educates you. And I hope that it helps us work together to build an even better birding community that's supportive and accepting of all. And please enjoy this happy hour. Bridget, thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Women Birders Happy Hour. Please tell us about yourself.
Oh, geez. Okay, so first off, I'm in northern Vermont. So I'm at the far end of Lake Champlain, about 5 minutes from the Canadian border. I live here with my husband and three kids. I have my own business called Bird Diva Consulting, which does outreach and other types of citizen science projects around birds and bird conservation. And my signature program is called Slow Birding, and it's a kind of a different approach to traditional birding.
So how did you get started with bird watching?
Oh, it's not a good story, Hannah. I was a naturalist, so I studied at the University of New Hampshire. I studied marine and freshwater biology, and I was really into kind of a lot of exploring and outreach and things like that. So naturally, I kind of moved into working for different nature centers across New England. And a lot of those were Audubon centers. So I worked at the Seacoast Science Center, which was run at one time by New Hampshire Audubon. I think it still is. I worked for Massachusetts Audubon at the gorgeous Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary on Cape Cod. And I've worked for Maine Audubon as well up at Hog Island. So birding didn't come very easy. My focus when I first got out of school was on pretty much invertebrates. I was really into things like sea anemones and nudibranchs and all that kind of stuff. And as I started to move around and go to different Audubon centers, of course, you start to meet different birders. And they weren't really very nice. They were very intense people. From my experience, they were always off to get the next best bird. They often were really closed off in their knowledge and what they knew, and a little bit snobby about it. A lot of this happened to me when I was working for Massachusetts Audubon on Cape Cod. And, people were coming there with a reason to see different birds. There's a huge diversity of bird species there, from, warblers to shorebirds. And so I get it, right? And it was just what that community was at that time. And I really didn't like it. And it wasn't until I moved to Vermont and started working for Audubon Vermont that laid back Vermont attitude kind of kicked in. And I started hanging out with the birding community here. And everybody was much more open and into like taking you to different birds. And they wanted you to learn more and really become a part of the community. So it was really different. And my spark bird that really kind of hooked me, right? Like when I worked at the Audubon Center in Huntington, we had to do a birdathon every year in May to raise money for the center. And I was still getting into birds at this point. And I can remember waking up. We would sleep out on the Nature Center property, which was great. So we could get owls at night and they'd be up early for the dawn chorus. And I put my tent in the field outside the Nature Center near where the old apple orchard was. And I remember waking up in the morning to this bird going, fire, fire, where, here, quick, just like over and over again. I was like, oh my gosh, like, what is that? Unzip the tent. And it was like a postcard. It was the indigo bunting at the top of the flowering apple tree. It was just gorgeous. And my mouth was just like, just dropped. And I was like, what in the world is that? Like, what is that bird? I have to know. And so that was the bird that really kind of grabbed my attention and kind of set me on this path to like discovering more about birds.
Well, that's amazing. That's an incredible story. I feel like even though bluebirds are so bright and vibrant and can be really easy to find, it's rarely somebody's spark bird. you hardly ever get people that are like, oh, I saw this amazing blue bird and, you know,
yeah.
I think birding is cool. It's always like the really weird birds. Like mine was red-winged blackbird, which is like just super common, you know, and not like they're a pretty bird, but not like a bluebird or
not
a bunting or something like that. Yeah.
The buntings are plentiful at this nature center. And I just, over the years there, developed like a really great relationship with understanding where that bird was on the property and then learning the young birds and all of that. And so it kind of was this moment where it was eye-catching and powerful. And it just stuck with me for sure.
That's really cool. So before you were talking about moving to Vermont and people became, you know, the birders were a lot more open and accepting. So you said that you might attribute that to like the, just how people are in Vermont, but do you think there's something else about that? Like were the people other places like just really competitive and they didn't want to have any time for beginners? And then in Vermont, they're like, eh, you know, we're not as competitive, or what do you think that's about?
I don't know. You know, I think there is that, there are, you know, competitive lister birders in the state. It seems to be a little bit more toned down. And I don't know if it's also a reflection of our geography as well, right? So I think about coastal places and I feel like a lot of the interactions that I've had with intense birders come in the coastal birding scene. I remember similar things happening, going on a trip with a bunch of friends to Maine to go see some different, I was really into sea ducks and they were into gulls, which was like way over my head at that point in time. And I can remember, we're going to see a Thayer's gull. I still, you know, it might be on my list, but so if you put a Thayer's gull in front of me, I probably to this day wouldn't know what it is, but it's on my list because we went to go see it. And while we were there, this van pulls up and the door slides open and a whole bunch of birders jump out and they all get set up and they're all asking everybody like, where's the Thayer's gull? Where's the Thayer's gull? So they're not even doing the work to find the bird. And they get on the bird and it's like, got it, got it, got it, got it. And everyone jumps back in the van and they're gone. And I was like, wait, what just happened? I was like, I couldn't, that whole mentality. I was like, no, that's so not what I want to do. So I think those experiences really informed kind of where I'm at now and how I wanted to be on the landscape with birds and then also draw people in to connecting with birds in a different way that wasn't, this intense listing competitive type of approach.
So is that really what your slow birding program is about?
Yeah, so slow birding, you know, came out of a bunch of different things. I've been really interested in John Young's work. He's the author of What the Robin Knows. I took an early workshop with him and Dan Gardoki back in the early 2000s. And that just put me on a different path. They were doing sit spots. They were doing this method where it was like a group sit and then collectively make observations and come back together, which was amazing to be able to have multiple eyes on the landscape at once. And so that really became a part of my birding practice. And over time, I wanted to get back to learning more about bird language and had opportunities to do that. And then was welcome to come and be a facilitator at some of the different programs that have been held here in the Northeast for bird language. And then we had kids. And that really shifted everything for me because now we have 3 kiddos. They are 7, 8, and 9 right now. And, you know, having children is amazing because they see things differently than we do. So I have a different lens. But at the same time, I couldn't bird in the same way that I had before, where I can just get up and go. And someone would be like, you want to join me here? I couldn't spend all day in the woods or wherever I wanted to go birding. So it really kind of refocused my efforts into birding at home. And at first I was like, oh, I know all the birds here, right? It's like chickadee and titmouse and cardinal and this. But when I really started to look and listen and I applied that sit spot practice to my backyard, I was really blown away by what was possible and what was coming through. I mean, I had high elevation breeding birds like Blackpoll warblers that are moving through during migration in the lowlands near in the Champlain Valley here, that are feeding before they go up into their breeding grounds in my backyard. So we've through our backyard big year list that we keep, we've I think we're at like something like 86 species for our backyard, which is just
Wow.
it blows my mind. Like we've seen bay-breasted warblers, we've had a heron in the brook next to us. There's so much more when you really slow down and start to look. I think the other piece of slow birding that gets away from that competitive piece is what else can we start to ask about birds other than just what is it? Because oftentimes when we get that name, our brain shuts down and we like move on. And in part, that's kind of how we've been trained in the birding community, right? Like that the idea is to check the bird off and then move on and, you know, find the next one and make a list of as many birds as we can. And what I've really started to shift and be interested in is how much do I know about that bird and what other questions can I ask when I'm in that moment with that bird? And the biggest one is like, what is it doing and why? So if I spend that time to allow those birds to come back in around me, they're going to show me a lot of other things that I wouldn't see if I was just if I just kept moving on.
Wow, that's amazing and such a good timely thing, you know, when most of us are stuck at home or trying to bird in our local area, and a different, totally different way of looking at these species rather than just like you said, like see it, move on, and
Yeah.
spend time with them and get to know them better.
Have you experienced this in your own spot at home? Like, have you like found this shift in being hunkered down and discovering stuff in your own yard?
I'm trying to get better at that. That was kind of my goal for 2020, even before the pandemic, was get to know like our local species a lot better. But honestly, we've been so busy. Like we own and operate a hotel here. And during the pandemic and quarantine, we were so busy painting and doing this and doing that here with maintenance that we really didn't actually get that many opportunities to go out and bird. But we do have a pretty good flock of house sparrows that hang out kind of just outside our yard. And I have just enjoyed watching them so much. And, you know, their dust baths and like all of the little behaviors that they do. I've learned a lot about house sparrows in the last couple months.
It's really amazing. And those little behaviors that we notice from very common species then provide a foundation from when we're looking at other species that help us ask more of those questions, which just make us develop a deeper connection with that bird. I think a lot about the profile of each bird. You know, how much do I know about each bird? How much do I know about chickadee or robin? Or even house sparrow. Man, oh, this year for me, it was starlings, right? We got starlings everywhere. And we named the starling out front. We call him Stew. And I watched Stew like do these like intense mating displays on the telephone wire. He had a beautiful cavity in the silver maple out in front of our tree. And I could hear it from the backyard. I could hear the change in his vocalizations. And if I walked around the front, he's sitting up on the line and his wings are out flat in the back and he's just shaking them like crazy and ripping through this song. And looking it up, come to find out, he is advertising for a female that's passing by in that moment to get her to come and check out his spot. So it was just moments like that that if that's what slow birding is to me, it's like shifting and really getting to know like whatever's in front of you in that moment in the deepest way possible.
Well, that's awesome. That's a great thing for us all to consider and definitely look into further. So you described a couple of experiences that you've had, but what has been your most memorable bird experience?
Oh, okay. You know. Oh, it's so hard because I'm so much in the moment with whatever's there. This morning, it was the robins in my backyard. All of a sudden, there were 25, 30 robins. I'm like, and they're all juveniles. And I just was like, why is that? why are they, there's not a single adult among them that I can tell. And they were all there. They were all over the neighborhood. I think about a couple of weeks ago with my kids, we were vacationing in Maine and laying out on the raft on the lake and watching this young loon dive. And it dove under the raft and came right up within a foot of the edge of the raft and popped right up. Cool. And just looked at all the kids, and the kids were so still. And then it dropped down, and then the parent came over, and the parent was not happy with that behavior. And the parent reared up, did that full like chest wing thing, and was making a racket. And it was almost like it was the parent being like, yeah, no, I saw that. That is not okay. It's not appropriate behavior. And now you don't get to stay in this cove the rest of the day. And it literally looked like it took the baby to like the next cove over away from us and was like, you're not supposed to be playing with kids. Sorry. So for me, it's just, it's whatever that last bird was, or that last big moment. You know, I think my wow bird is definitely a big moment. I think another big moment for me was when I felt like I was shifting into being able to identify things that might be a little bit rarer. My first like rare bird sighting in Vermont, I can remember very well. I was all alone. I was by Lake Carmi, which is another one of the inland lake up here, close to the border. And the rainstorm was coming across the lake, and it was in the fall. And there was this bird, this diving duck that just kept coming back up. And it looked like it had algae stuck to the back of his head, because this big piece of stuff back of his head, but it's all black. And I'm like looking at it and I'm thinking, that looks like a tufted duck. I had no experience with tufted ducks. I don't know why my brain thought that. A new ringneck duck, come to find out. I had a friend who came down later that day, pictures for me. But that moment of realizing that it was something different, and then kind of going through that checklist in my head and really owning that ID, that's another really super memorable bird for me. Tufted duck.
That's amazing. Yeah, those are a cool bird. So what influences have you had in your birding and in your profession?
Okay, so let's see. In terms of resources, I think I'm thinking about the Birder's Handbook was really big for me. This is like pre, what is it? Birds of the World now online.
Oh, yeah.
This is before everything came online. But that thing was like with me nonstop. I can remember my friends who were teasing me because I wasn't into birds and I was working for Audubon, getting me a National Geographic guide to birds of North America. And I just looked at it and I was like, oh my God, it's so overwhelming because there were so many different birds there. So let's see. So that one. And then lately, there's a lot of new stuff coming out that's just kind of sinking right in with the thinking that I've had from John Young's work to Nathan Pyplow's new Peterson's Guide to Bird Songs. To the Birding by Impression book, which I find really, really good. It's just kind of shifting how we learn about birds and really trying to think about how we use both the right and left sides of our brain to kind of think about the big picture and what we're seeing. People-wise, man, being in Vermont, the folks here, again, were just so welcoming. And I think what I started to do is like track down the people who knew more than me and just be really annoying and be like, can you just take me out with you? So Pfeiffer and Ted Muren wrote the book Birdwatching in Vermont, which is a great guidebook for the state of Vermont. And so those two were really super helpful in helping me get off my feet. I started to track down other female birders too, because there weren't a lot out there. One person who I met who's still, very, very active in the birding community is Pat Folsom. She lives in the Mad River Valley. And she's birded all over the country. She and I ran into each other by happenstance at a warbler walk being offered by this guy that lives in the Mad River Valley and has been for years, that was like the warbler guy to go to. And so both of us ended up on a walk with him at the same time. And she's very inspirational to me. So yeah, those were the big influences. I think I read, you know, a lot of the other books that were out at, you know, through the years about the big year and Ken Kaufman, a lot of Ken Kaufman books. And now I'm going back and I'm trying to find all the women birders and ornithologists who no one talked about. In fact, maybe they even suppressed them because they thought their work was too, I don't know, I've heard it called flowery, or, you know, it was too, too observation based, in a way, a lot like what I'm into now, which is slowing down and watching behaviors. So folks like Florence Marion Bailey and Mabel Osgood Wright, Nigelt Bachlan is the other one. So just, I'm trying to go back and find the women and then talk about them more in my work, to kind of bring those women birders that I don't think got enough attention back into the scene.
That's really cool. I'm so glad you're doing that. I always try to like find women birders too. And I'll find like a Audubon article, you know, that's for Women International Day or something like that. But then it's always kind of the same people. And there's got to be more women that were out there doing this thing before that,
yeah,
like you said, or might have been suppressed.
That's why your work is so cool, right?
I hope so.
Yeah. And you're doing that, right? Like your blog posts, like I read some of your blog posts and things like that. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like this is what we need to do. We need to start to, like you're doing with this podcast, put more women birders out there. The other thing that I've been trying to do in my own work is identify those women, those young women in the birding community, and like go, hey, you want to go birding with me? Come with me. Offer mentorship for young female birders. So that's my way now of trying to like give back and elevate and bring some other women into the spotlight in the birding community.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what advice do you have for other women that are looking to start birding or are already birding?
Yeah, let's see. So I think some of the stuff that I think back on some of the things that I experienced as a female birder, especially as a beginning birder, I would recommend, I think, first of all, if you're not having a good time on whatever trip or walk you're on, or you're not syncing with the leader, don't stick around. Like, fall to the back of the group and just bird on your own. I would search out people that you feel comfortable and connected with to be your mentors. And I think asking a lot of questions in your local birding community to find out who those people are can be really, really valuable. I've been on some really hard bird walks as a beginning birder, and I felt like, well, this is how you do it. And for some reason it just never fit and it never felt good. And I feel like I wasted a lot of time, doing that for sure. I think the other piece is developing that confidence to ask questions when you're new, and then to have confidence in your own knowledge, and being able to talk about that and share that. Yeah, I just like that feeling that we don't know enough, and women do this a lot, like we take the back seat. And I know some of us are introverts, and I'm probably a little bit more extroverted than most people. So, but I do. I have to challenge myself to contribute and to pitch in my thoughts and my thinking around birds and birding. And I think the more we do that, the more we can connect with others and then learn to take that next step.
Yeah, Yeah, that's really good advice. And that's actually something I've heard from a lot of different people doing this show already, is that we need to work on our confidence and we need to be out there and you know, not be afraid to be wrong, which I think is something that women a lot of times have trouble with, is the fear of being wrong.
Yeah. So I've gone so far as to, you know, think back on some of those experiences that I've had where I felt like I've been mansplained or put down or like dismissed, and like think about like, okay, so if this happens again, what am I gonna say? Like, what's gonna be my response, and how do I do this in a way that's not super confrontational, but is still not gonna make me feel like, why didn't I do something, or why didn't I say something, or why didn't I share that thing afterwards? So I have in one of my little bird books that where I keep some of my lists and ideas and things, I have these little things, these little sentences to help me kind of boost my confidence when I'm not, when I have had moments where I haven't felt that way.
Oh, that's good. I like that, because you can't always think of it in the moment, but if you have like a list of, you know, those sorts of things that maybe, you know, you can just page to it and you're like, oh yeah, this was, I wrote this. It was good. It's a good comeback.
This is what I'm going to use this time. Yeah.
So overall, in your experience as a birder and a woman, what's it been like? Do you feel like it's been a positive experience, or do you feel like you just keep trudging and fighting and, you know, day after day?
I think it's gotten a lot better. And maybe that's because my platform has shifted and grown through my career as I get older. You know, I can remember times, I still get nervous about birding alone, but I'm still very like, no, I'm going out. I was out on a bridge over the Mississippi. We were looking for common nighthawks, and it was starting to get dark, and these four-wheelers were coming through, and we were like making a plan in the moment, like, but jokingly, right? So it still happens. So that safety piece is really hard to still kind of deal with and grapple with. But I feel better now that I'm like more confident about, no, I'm still going to take that space. I still, you know, deserve to be able to enjoy going out by myself and birding. I just may take a couple more steps to make sure that I'm going to be safe when I do that. I'm better now at, sharing my ideas and feeling confident about where I'm at. So it's changed a lot there as well, I think. And I'm seeing it change for, you know, women birders all over the country. You know, I think a lot of that, the Me Too movement really kind of trickled over into a lot of other different areas, including the birding community, much like the Black Lives Matter movement right now as well. Mm-hmm. And so it's giving voice to other people. And I'm seeing folks like you start to raise other people in females in the community, which I think is really great. I think it is. I think it's just, it's getting better. I think we have to keep telling the stories. I think we have to go back and tell the stories of women from the past, because man, every time I crack open a book on a new female naturalist or ornithologist or birder, I'm like blown away by like what's in there. And I just keep thinking, I'm almost 50. Why do I not know about this person? That's not okay. And so I want to make sure that doesn't happen to other folks coming up into the birding community.
Well, that's awesome. And thank you so much for all the work that you've been doing, to get people excited and interested about birds and, you know, slow down and think about them a little bit harder and try to promote women and, you know, get people to know about these historical figures that we should be paying attention to. And is there any last thing you'd like to say, or where can we find out more about you and what you do and how to get in touch with you?
Yes, I'm all over social medias and things like that as Bird Diva. I think if you type in Bird Diva, you'll find me. The website is birddiva.com. I think, you know, my big message for folks in the birding community, I mean, there's two things. One, you can bird any way you want and it's awesome, right? Just own that way. And I think in the birding community that's established, we have to start to open up a little bit more and look at those different ways and think about them. a little bit more. And I would challenge experienced lister birders to open up as well and try some other approaches to birding. I know, especially as, you know, if you're a list ticker and you've got all your lists done, you're always searching for like, what is that next goal? And maybe by slowing down and doing sit spots in different places and starting to ask some of those other questions other than what is that bird, you'll have a whole other layer to add to your birding practice.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much. It was fun talking to you, and I look forward to working with you more.
Hannah, I hope we cross paths in person someday. I'm really jazzed by your work and excited for this podcast. And thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you and all your listeners.
Well, thanks. Thank you again, Bridget, for joining me for this episode. It was great getting to know you. And Vermont is definitely one of those places that I know I need to go. I just need a whole East Coast trip. So if anybody wants to sponsor me for that, I would be super excited. I'll pay for the drinks. And thank you again, Bridget, for joining me. It was fun to hear from you, and I look forward to birding with you someday. And thank you all for listening to my podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, maybe learned something. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Music, and anywhere else you listen to me. If you'd like to connect with me on the socials, please follow me on Instagram at Hannah Goes Birding. My Twitter is at WomenHH, or you can email me at womenbirders@gmail.com. I also have resources and information on GoBirdingPodcast.com. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to seeing you at the next happy hour.